The Board of Directors meeting for Oceano Community Service District is now called to order, 6:30 p.m., July 22nd, 2009. Roll call, please.
Director Dahl?
Here.
Director Dean?
Here.
Director Lucy?
Here.
Vice President Hill?
Here.
President Mann?
I'm here. Jim's not. Please stand and join me in the flag salute. Ready? Again?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First thing is public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on any items not on the agenda. Is there any public comment? Any public comment? Seeing none, board member items for discussion. I'll start with Mary.
No, nothing tonight.
Burn? I have nothing.
Nothing at this time.
Okay, I do have something. Several members of the public have addressed me, have come to me or called me this week regarding Oceano Advisory meeting that was supposed to be held on Monday. People showed up for it, including the commander, and there was no meeting and no notice. So we need to remember if something's scheduled here, if you're not going to have that meeting, it needs to be posted.
Yeah, the meeting will be this Monday instead.
Okay, and so it will be need to be posted here by Friday, close of business. Is that correct, Kevin,
no,
for it to be a Monday meeting? Or does it have to be posted on Thursday?
It's 72 hours,
okay.
So Friday was soon enough for a
okay,
meeting.
Thank you. That was all I had. Review and approval of the minutes from July 8th, 2009. Everybody have a chance to read the minutes?
Yes.
Any public comment on the meetings or on the minutes? If not,
I will move that we approve the minutes of July 8th, 2009 as presented.
Looking for a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Well, for street lighting, 6. Pamela, you want to talk about what we have done so far on that?
Yes, we've talked about it. We did pass out to the board members last time our district policy for processing street light requests and light ordinances. The other thing is I do believe that we should have street lights in new subdivisions, and any new subdivision with interior roads in excess of 300 feet should probably have some street lights for lighting. Those street lights should be maybe placed about every 300 feet on roads where this ordinance applies. So maybe we can put those into effect. The other thing is some new developments may need street lights for safety or just parking lot areas or things like that. I'm not totally up on street lights, but I think we need to talk about what we consider would be good. I think we need street lights in this community for safety and security. We're changing from what used to be a rural kind of setting where it was larger lots and people didn't walk. And now we have people walking on streets that have no paved sidewalks. So I'd like to see any new development have street lights in them. Those are one that is one of our one of our rights that we do here in this district is we do pay for street lighting. I do not want to pay for putting in the street lights particularly, and I don't want to be left holding the bag when a developer is let off the hook and does not put in the street lights that should be put in there. So I wanted to open it up for discussion and see what other members of the board thought and see if we can just pursue this and write up something. And I think we need to put something in place if we're going to be reviewing all these developments from here on out.
You have any thoughts on the subject, Mary?
The document that I'm looking at, this is only, this is voluntary. This has no mandates or no language to developers.
This is how we've handled putting in streetlights.
This is requests for people in the community when they wanted streetlights. I should have mentioned that because people can come to us and request that a streetlight be put in place, and this was our process for doing it.
Okay, so this was strictly a voluntary situation, not a mandated situation.
Not mandated. These were people already in situ.
What I'm trying to figure out is how we can go back, because we do have some of those developments that are actively being developed as we speak and 90% empty. And I'm wondering if some way there those plans can go back and be reviewed and the legal lights be put in.
I think once the developer has thoughts on it.
Well, I like both of those ideas that, you know, once the street light's taken out, that it needs to be, you know, by a developer, it needs to be replaced before they, you know, we sign off on it. And same thing with new development. You know, all new development should be looked at for that requirement, as well as many others. Yeah. No, I agree with both of those things.
There's some seats up here in the front, gentlemen. You're more than welcome to take them. The one other way that street lighting can be handled in some of the areas, a group of people of, say, a block or two blocks, they want street lights, they can form an assessment district and do that. That's probably, with the way the economy is right now, that's probably not the way people are going to go, but that is one way that people can get street lighting. So where do we go from here, Pamela? Take it back to...
I'd like to make sure that everybody's in agreement so we can take it back and write something up and have the our attorney review it, our counsel review it, and then bring it back to people. Unless we have something on the books, we cannot actually say you have to put them in.
And I think tonight it's just a consensus if you want us to do this, because we didn't have an action item on here. Is that right, Ryan?
I'm sorry. Well,
that does
mean
anything.
We don't have it on as an action item.
No.
Presenting it the way
consensus is fine. Thank you. Just wanted to be sure.
And that would be in addition to what to this policy here. Is there going to be any modification of this policy?
Well, if the consensus is for us to work on it, I'll come back for you to approve it.
Okay.
Yeah. If you'd like something modified, let us know, you know, because it is not, there could be adjustments made, I'm thinking, to this policy, too. It's very, very old. It has been used. We used it on several occasions. And it has worked for people in the community asking for a streetlight to be placed. I just don't want to lose out on any more streetlights with subdividers not having to put them in subdivisions. That's not the way I want the... I don't want our community to look like that, and I'm nice with our street lighting costs. That is one area we're not over budget on.
Yeah, the only thing I would not want to see is I don't want to see the yellow street lights that you see in some communities.
Well, the vapor light kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, we have some more late arrivals, gentlemen. There are three seats right up here in front for you. Please come up and take them.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Okay, so we have a consensus on that to proceed with writing something up for the board to look at.
I think so.
Okay. Now we're on 7A, weed abate. Weed, this should be hazards. It shouldn't be called weed.
Right.
Would you like
to be called weed?
No.
A weed is anything that's not wanted.
Kevin, would you introduce this, please?
Certainly. At your last meeting, you conducted a hearing for protest to the weed abatement charges that were levied against property owners that didn't clear the hazards from their property. Unfortunately, there was one error on the list, one parcel that the situation had been previously resolved and should not have appeared on that list to be sent to the tax collector as a tax lien. Also, I had received prior to the board hearing a protest letter that I had intended to handle at the staff level if possible. Upon reconsidering, I thought, well, I should have just sent it on to the board, but it did seem like something that I ought to meet with the chief and the fire captain on first before sending to the board, since I didn't have an opportunity to meet with them first. In the meantime, that appeal letter has made a reasonable case, and at the staff level, we decided that parcel also should be removed from the list. So at that point, I called our attorney and asked him what should be done, because the board did approve a resolution. It had a list of names. You don't have a procedure for taking lists off the names, even if people come in and pay prior to it being submitted to the county tax collector, and that's another issue. Perhaps we should work on that. But anyway, the attorney's counsel and advice was that we readopt the resolution without those two names. And weighing in on that decision was the fact that the two that did need to come off, it just seemed the weight of it would dictate the board having to readopt the resolution confirming the costs and forward the charges to the county for collection. Now, going back to the hearing of July 8th, when you handled two appeals, one of the appeals you waived the charges entirely. So that
Correct.
Name has been removed from the list.
Yes.
The other name, you waived one half of the charge. A follow-up letter was sent to both of those owners. And, of course, the owner that had the waived charges entirely, no action was required. However, the owner that had half his charge waived was given until today to come in and pay. And I have to say, I haven't like made myself absolutely sure that he hasn't paid, but I did, because I didn't talk to anyone at the front, but I did check the records, and it doesn't appear that that person has paid. Mm-hmm. So I've left him on the list for collection of charges, even though for the half amount. You did waive half the amount. He hasn't paid, so legitimately that should be going forward. So if you see his name there and go, why isn't he off the list? Well, he hasn't paid yet. So.
And he had till 5 o'clock today to pay that?
Correct.
Is that correct? And it goes to the tax collector tomorrow? Is that correct?
We'll send this out tomorrow, yes.
Okay.
Isn't that a little hasty?
Well,
got 2 weeks.
We could wait. Hasty on what, Director Lucy?
Well, there's confusion on whether we have policy to even move forward. We only saw half of the appeals. So instead of, like, going for the, you know, the final resting place, which is the tax collector, wouldn't it kind of make sense to kind of, like, straighten this out a little bit and then send the proper ones on versus having to go back and, you know, change errors that we made and stuff?
Director Lucy, in the past,
I mean, I haven't seen the two that the staff waived. I didn't see the letters. I didn't see the appeals or anything like that. I mean, we had long presentations on the other two because they came to the board. But the two that was waived by the staff, I haven't seen those letters. I don't know if they had one weave.
The list, because they had, it was not that person's lot that was taken care of. So that name was there on air. So that has been taken off. The second one, the general manager and I believe Captain Leathers had looked at the appeal. They decided to waive that one. In the past, when they've come to us,
what was the decision to waive it? What grounds?
I don't know if waiving is the correct term on those. They were incorrectly assessed in the first place. They
okay.
shouldn't have been charged. It's not really a waiver. In one case, as President Mann has pointed out, the person didn't even own the property, and in the second case was very similar to that, where the majority or almost 90% of what was abated, maybe even 100%, the owner's view is it was 100% of what was abated was not on his property either. It was up against his property, and that's what triggered our initial decision to charge him for the abatement. But his appeal was, just because it's very close to and adjacent to my property doesn't mean that I should abate all the rest of it. That was his point. I'm not sure waive's the correct term, but
removed.
And I did
use I will
term.
Change that to removed from the list. Going on with my little scenario, in the past, the names come to us. People who wanted to protest them came. Those were taken care of. And then when we said these will be sent to the tax collector, they had up until the day, or at 5 o'clock the night before, they were sent to the tax collector to come in and pay them. So this is no different than the way.
Well, then we need to hurry up and get it there. Send it FedEx.
Thank you.
So the four names have been removed. I see the two that came and appealed have been removed, but
one should still be on there, Mary, for $54.
Okay, but the two that the staff removed that we just got an oral presentation on, those two have been removed from the list, I assume.
Yes.
That's correct. The one that you waived in its entirety has been removed because there's nothing due, and the one that you waived half remains on the list.
Pamela, do you want to talk about that right now since it's the same subject?
We brought it up at the fire committee because we had so many questions about the way it was handled and the postcard and the notice and how it should be defined. And it's we thought fire hazard abatement was a much better definition of what we're doing here than weed abatement. And at that point, Captain Heath said, well, it might be good if we kind of aligned our procedure with the others, with the other, like Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, so that we could utilize the same procedures, perhaps even utilize the same bidder this next time because they have different bidders for the work. We talked about, you know, a handout to explain to people what's going on. We talked about also having the vehicle with some sort of placard, and we talked about communication with our own people in our community a lot more, to let them know what's coming up and to let them know what this means. And we talked about our postcards that Vern has hated from the get-go, because they're so regimented, and it's a very legalese type of thing that people get noticed with. So what we decided is we let our Chief Heath work with us and with the other entities and come up with something that would work for all. Since we're working toward a JPA, we think we should also work toward the JPA and toward a unified front on how to do this weed abatement. And apparently they have some other options that they can look at. And I'll let Chief Heath maybe speak to some of those issues.
Thank you. As we discussed last evening, I felt that it might be prudent to put Brian Leathers and myself together and compare the three programs and see if there's any place where we can find some standardization of the three programs, just as Director Dean has outlined. So we will be doing that in the near future and be bringing something back to the fire committee as a recommendation.
And could I?
Could you or someone get us copies of those ordinances from the other two communities so that we can have them as well? And as this JPA moves forward, who's going to be Who's going to be the one that has the authority over this weed abatement? Would that be the It'd JPA? Be,
not weed abatement.
It would be the fire chief of the organizations.
Okay. So the whoever's going to be over the elected officials over the JPA is going to be the ones that will be determining the what these ordinances are going to be for in the future?
That's correct.
Okay.
The way I see it is we're going to have to operate still under the separate municipal and district ordinances.
Until the JPA comes up with their own ordinance?
Well, I believe that each agency will still have to operate under their own municipal codes and the district code. Because the weed abatement will be done in each of those entities, the JPA is not a district of itself.
All right.
So as much as we can get the ordinances standardized, that would be the benefit to the weed abatement program, doing it in the three separate agencies.
Okay. But it will still stay, the decisions on those will still stay here with this
Correct.
Board. Okay. Thank you.
Mary, you had another question?
When you're going through this, will you do me a favor and look at the appeals process, too? Because I feel like the appeals process is off. I have a real problem with how, you know, you come to the board to appeal something that happened in another department, which is the fire department. And so I kind of feel like the appeals process needs to be before the fire committee, you know, or whoever's overseeing that program, not really before the board, you know. So would you take into consideration, like, the appeals process?
I will look at that.
You know, because part of it was done with staff and with a verbal, you know, report, and part of it was done publicly, you know, where you have a list and you know, but there's no, the other half we have no idea, not even as directors who they were, what the situation was or anything like that. So the appeals process maybe needs to be from the people who actually do the abatement and can speak to it better than us.
Sure. I will certainly look at that sharing for those people, but I think there is another method that we can do that may be more informal to rectify some of those misinterpretations or those discrepancies that we may have with the property owners.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And pardon me calling you Chief Heath, it's Chief
okay.
Hubert.
And he's, as long as you used his name, he's now got the program.
Okay, fire personnel cooperative agreement. Kevin, do you want to, or do you
yes,
want to share that
I'll,
with
I'll
Chief?
I'll start off here, and then the Chief will take over.
Okay.
Did we have
one
to?
One second.
We,
did we do the
resolution? We have to do the resolution.
You can, we need a motion and a vote on resolution.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for
2009-8.
Yes.
Those properties that were not who we originally charged, I think those were like county property or so. Do we get to charge the county?
No.
We usually contact the county, and they're pretty good about doing what needs to be done.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how that works.
All right.
Vern, since you brought up that we didn't do the resolution, I'll let you do that.
Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome. Here it is, if you would like it.
I hope you're not asking me to read it in full.
Well, you brought it up.
Okay.
You do it any way you'd like.
I move that we adopt Resolution 2009-8. And if anybody needs additional reading on that, I'll leave that up to the general manager.
Well, I think we have to say title only, don't we?
2009-8 is a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District rescinding and restating Resolution 2009-06 and confirming the costs associated with the removal of weeds from various parcels of land and directing staff to forward the charges to the county auditor to collect.
I second that.
Okay, this will be a roll call.
Director Dahl?
Oh, excuse me. First, public comment on this. Any public comment? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? President Mann?
Yes.
Would you like me to sign this one that I have here, or do you have another one?
You could sign that one.
Okay, my pleasure. Now, we'll move on to the fire personnel.
Grover Beach Fire Departments to exchange fire personnel. Each department operates with a limited number of full-time personnel. From time to time, each agency experiences temporary vacancies due to injury, illness, vacation, and out-of-county suppression assignments. When this happens, we aren't always able to fill those vacancies with in-house resources. The Fire Personnel Cooperative Agreement allows the agencies during those times of experiencing unusual vacancies to maintain necessary minimum staffing levels by pooling resources and utilizing full-time fire captains and fire engineers from other departments. Each department will develop its own internal policy to determine when it is necessary to temporarily obtain full-time personnel resources from the others. For any and all hours worked by a captain or engineer, the individual remains an employee of only his or her original city or district. Each city or district shall pay its respective employees for any time worked, including those hours worked as a guest for another city or district. The parties agree to reimburse each other for the direct costs associated with the guest captain's or engineer's services. For purposes of this agreement, direct costs shall include A, the borrowed employee's hourly rate or time and one half of the hourly rate for those hours considered overtime in the ordinary course of performing services as a firefighter, and any and all taxes, including without limitation, withholding, FICA, FICA, and SDI taxes. Reimbursement shall be made within 30 days of receipt of an invoice. The sharing of personnel is critical to the delivery of fire services in the three communities, especially during fire season. Once the Joint Powers Authority is formed, this arrangement will no longer be necessary. A copy of the proposed agreement is attached. The Fire Oversight Committee recommended that the agreement be approved by the City Councils and the Board of Directors. It was approved by Grover Beach City Council on June 22nd and the Arroyo Grande City Council on June 23rd. This concludes my staff report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that the board may have.
Pamela, any questions?
We reviewed this at the fire committee last night, and we recommend approval of this fire personnel cooperative agreement. We think it's covered all our concerns, and we think it would be a benefit to the fire departments.
Vern?
Is this going to change any of our costs as far as having somebody here at regular pay or at overtime?
Injury, it creates an overtime situation. So if you had one of your captains, let's say you had two of your captains, and well, make it easier, one of your captains, anytime one of your captains takes vacation or sick leave, it creates an overtime situation. It wouldn't be any different if you were down all three of your captains and you needed a captain over here. It would create an overtime situation.
Okay, and if somebody is filling, well, everyone has that minimum staffing, all three communities.
Correct.
So it wouldn't matter where that person came from. It's going to be whether they came from our district or a different district, that is always going to be an overtime payment situation. Okay, so it's a wash financially, too.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mary?
So let me get this right. So this, you drew this up until the JPA is complete. Is that, and then at that time, this is a null and void document?
Correct.
Okay. So is there going to be a lot of difference between this and the JPA besides, you know, the actual merging or?
Right now, I have to treat all the individuals as apples and oranges. And I have no ability to treat them as apples and apples, so to speak.
Right.
This agreement allows me, if necessary, to be able to utilize a captain or engineer from another agency in any of the agencies. And right now, I don't have that ability. Once we become a JPA, they will be all under one employer with one MOU. So they will be apples and apples at that time.
Okay. So this will allow you to operate and function in
Correct.
A more consistent, precise, even way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is there going to be any issues as far as someone being used to working in one of the three departments, and then as far as going to another firehouse and any differences in equipment or stuff like that that's going to have to be trained for, or issues that could bring up problems in that area, or are we all okay on that?
The folks now train together, and they do multi-company drills, and we're in the process of City of Arroyo Grande has an OES unit, a state-owned Office of Emergency Services unit, and a truck, and we have been going through the process of
speaker work period, and they're not into overtime yet. If they're transferred into another firehouse and they're still at their regular pay, and then when they come back to finish out their work period, they move into overtime because of the fact that they work somewhere else. Is that going to be a scenario that may happen?
No. Okay. What happens is we will establish a list of personnel that are off duty, and based on a rotation. And I, to be honest with you, I don't anticipate even getting that far if and when we do become a JPA by this time next year. But there will be a list established, and if there is a need, we will go off that list. So the scenario that you gave us probably would not happen.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And of course, I agree with the things Pamela said. The fire committee totally supports this. Kevin, did you have anything to add?
No, I did not.
Okay. Any comments from the public? Your name for the record and your location?
PJ Ferguson. I'm the president of IFF Local 4403. We represent the career fire personnel at Arroyo Grande, Gober Beach, and Oceano. And our local fully supports the cross-staffing program. We spoke positively at both the Arroyo Grande and the Gover Beach Council meetings, and we would also speak positively in its effect here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bring it back to the board. Looking for a motion.
I move that we would approve the fire personnel cooperative agreement set forth as...
I second it. Roll call on this, please, Kevin.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And we will sign those and get them back to you. Formation of the Fire Joint Powers Authority.
So is there another issue, or do we want to let people leave? Or?
Oh, I'm sure they're here for the duration. Because they're all firefighters sitting out there, I do believe.
Yes.
And one fire secretary.
You know, the phone tree had been called.
Yes.
The Fire Oversight Committee has been working on a consolidation of the... I'm here to continue further with the consolidation has been both to the Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach City Councils, and now it's before your board for decision. We're at the point where we finally prepared a detailed draft budget, and I would like to emphasize the word draft. We wanted to get some numbers that were fairly accurate for the Fire Oversight Committee and then the City Councils and this board to consider, but realizing this is a work in progress, so these numbers are draft and they are changing. It's hard to prepare a unified draft budget because all three organizations tend to budget a little bit differently, even having different categories of expenses, and even within those expenses, maybe charging different things or not charging different things. So it makes it a difficult task to develop a unified budget. But I think Chief Hubert and Chief Heath have done a wonderful job of attempting to do that. They're fire personnel, after all, not so much in the accounting end of things, and so they've done a good job, and they've had a lot of assistance from AG Accounting Department, I know, and so a lot of credit goes there. The initial budget figure for a joint budget is $3,597,000. That would be first year costs for under a JPA. assuming a start date of July 1st, 2010. Now, the committee has already recommended...
Can I just stop you for one moment? Which document are you working off of? Because I know you're working off this consolidation, which I thought that was what we just passed, some form of a consolidation so you could move forward. And then we have changes to the consolidation, and then we have considerations of a consolidation, and then a personnel cooperative agreement consolidation. And so just consolidate me. Just help us. Poor board members down here. Which document are you working off of?
Certainly. There's...
And they all have your name on them.
Correct. There's three documents we're working on. There's a memo to the board of directors from myself as your general manager. The subject is consideration of consolidation of fire services. That's my brief staff report summarizing. That's all three agencies' logos at the top of it. It's how it's easily identified. That report was received, discussed, and then a decision made. Let's send it out to the two city councils and the Oceano Board of Directors. So that's the report that resulted in your meeting tonight. And attached to that is the cost allocation formula. That's how we got to the 20% of the Oceano share. And then attached to that is a consolidation cost analysis, which is the detailed preliminary budget, draft budget breakdown. And I think there were some new numbers that recently came out, maybe even outdating what was sent out on Friday.
The page we put out up here tonight is the replacement of the last page of Kevin's report.
Last two pages.
Yeah. And that says consolidation cost analysis. What you received actually is a little darker font than what's in the
and it says take this off your packet and put the new ones on.
And it does say revised 7-2209, so you're looking at the revised cost consolidation cost analysis.
Looks like
see, it'll say revised right down here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The numbers in my staff report haven't changed that much.
And the total, the final difference on both of these charts are the same. We just had discovered something that needed to be clarified for people that are not bean counters, which we did last night. And we thank you. I believe you're the lady that redid this, and certainly appreciate your work on that.
So I was about to get to some math here. The overall budget is $3,597,000. Our share is 20%. If you crank that number on through, then the initial annual cost to the Oceano Community Services District would be $719,000. Now, that number is well within our projected revenues of $800,000 still at the district. So with the initial budget figure being $719,000 and our revenues being $800,000, there's still some things we will need to do. And I would expect at this point that even with those residual costs, both the JPA costs and the OCSD costs would not exceed the $800,000 figure. Also, the thing the board needs to keep in mind is, I don't think, maybe others in the room have better information than me, but as of today, July 21st or 22nd, I haven't had a chance to fully become aware of the state budget and what has been proposed. And further, it's only a proposed budget from our governor and the leaders of both parties in the Assembly and State Senate. It still has to pass the Assembly and State Senate. And so we don't know what's going to happen ultimately with the budget. But there has been talk of a shift of property tax revenues from local jurisdictions like us to the state. And that just shifts the state's budget problem and responsibility and accountability, shifts it from those who have authority and control of it that we've elected Sacramento down to the local community. So I want you to keep that in mind for that caveat. We are anticipating our annual property tax revenue to be $721,000. But if there's some sort of shift of property tax has been done in the past, then it would be less than that, obviously.
Yeah. So, Kevin, can I ask you then, if you're anticipating a shift down, which, you know, like the rest of the economy.
Well, I wasn't anticipating. I just.
Well, let's be realistic. You know,
think about
the likelihood of us getting cut is probably a little bit higher than us getting a bonus at this point, right?
That we can
we
all
agree on that
with.
One?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if the cost is going to be, and this is really bare bones, I think $719,400. Why would we not, just for safety reasons, is to round down instead of rounding up to 800,000? Why wouldn't you go to 721, which would only leave a $2,000 difference, which is very, very scary.
PA, and given the facts as we know them today, there's nothing that would indicate that we should not proceed with the JPA. And when the fire committee reviewed this last night, they in fact agreed that we should proceed with the formation of the JPA, knowing that there's this shakiness, as you well point out, Director Lucy, and the need to be conservative. Even considering all that, it still looks like a green light to go ahead with the JPA. The further part of that motion, the second part, is that designate the Fire Oversight Committee as the interim JPA Board of Directors to negotiate a MOU with the Firefighters Union. The JPA will need a new Memorandum of Understanding with the union for labor issues, and that's got to be negotiated by somebody with some sort of authority. So the idea is that the Oversight Committee would act as the interim Board of Directors for that purpose and that purpose only. That isn't to say they're going to do the negotiations. They're just going to be responsible for seeing it gets done and giving direction. There'll probably be somebody appointed to negotiate with the union.
I think I would take this opportunity to just talk a little bit. I worry about the 8% that we could possibly lose. But the last time the governor decided to take money, we'll remember that the public safety wasn't affected. Oceano was not affected last time. We hope that that would still be the same scenario this year. But if it wasn't, and we were hit with 8%, the two cities would be hit with 8% also. I mean, it will go everywhere. So then a whole new budget would have to be made at that point anyway, because it would be off, not just for us, but for the other two agencies. So I really feel we need to proceed as we are in our planning, because, again, this is a draft budget. It doesn't go into effect until July of 2010, you know, which is a year from now. We certainly hope the state of California is in a better financial picture by then. If not, we'll have to make some adjustments, all of us. But we can't sit for a year and say, oh, well, we're not going to work on this.
Seeing the proposed budget, and details just seem to be leaking out slowly.
Yeah.
I think when they announced the deal yesterday or day before, they said, oh, on Thursday we'll give you more information. And I noticed in the meantime stuff has been leaking out here and there and in pieces. And then, as I mentioned, just because we know what the governor and the leaders
what they want
on, we don't know where the votes are in the Senate and Assembly to pass it. So
didn't we also pass with the last time we had an ERAF, we had an agreement, or there was a passing of a bill that if they do take money from us again, that they're going to have to pay it back in a, within 2 years, I think.
Before they borrow the next time. But I have a bridge I want to sell you too.
Yeah.
It's an interest loan at 3 years, payable
3 years. 3 years. Wasn't it? It was also supposed to be paid back before they did it, tried to borrow again. Yes. Okay. The one other thing, though, I do know is that our property tax is estimated to be 0.5% lower this year than it was last year. 0.5% is not really too bad. But we were told that we're going to get 0.5% less than what we got last year. So,
which is and the amount we receive is around $700,000.
Yeah.
So it goes back to my question, is why are we budgeting with an $800,000 number versus a $700,000 number? Because we all want to see this succeed. I mean, I haven't heard anybody speak negative about it not going forward. I think that uniformly, I don't think I've ever heard any opposition to this, except for, you know, like 3 years ago or something like that. But so that's why I have to go back to the budget. Why not budget with 700,000, and if you get 721, hoop hoop hooray, you know. But to have to redo everything because you budgeted it at 800,000, that's an $80,000 difference. And yeah, it'd be great if we get it, you know, and it would be earmarked to go to the JPA course, you know. But I'm very reluctant to overspend. If we get it, great.
A budget is just a plan.
Well, sometimes it is, yeah. Just a plan that we like, yes, to stick to.
Yeah, but we have to remember the other two agencies involved in this have already, I believe, approved this.
$1,000. Because we're budgeted.
Mary, we're the one agency that couldn't, because...
No, we committed to $800,000 in this joint. That's our commitment.
We're not approving the agreement tonight. We're just approving to proceed with the
planning.
There's an implementation schedule there that's in the Fire Oversight Committee report on page.
So then humor me, okay? I'm not trying to create.
No, I've agreed. I think we should be conservative.
And do two budgets then. You know, worst case scenario, best case scenario.
Director Lucy, I agree with you. I agree that that's what we should be doing. What I presented here was, I guess the number's as sharp as the pencil could make them without taking into effect any contingencies. And I hear your message. I think most of the board agrees, if not all the board, yeah, we ought to be more conservative in that when we forward numbers from now and in the future, or at least explain what they are and where we got them in more detail. These were very rough numbers at this point, rounded. In the future, we'll be more conservative, use an approach that allows for the fact that something may be taken away from us in the future.
Okay. This does bring up a question in my mind, too. Is when we, as we move forward with this JPA, do we commit to a certain amount of money to it each year? And put that amount of money toward it, or are we committing to everything that comes in toward it, less our certain costs, or how is that done? And if it is a commitment, then if our income on this changes, what is this? You know, how is that handled?
Well, the JPA will be made up of representatives from each. You know, let me lay some foundation here. The JPA will be made up of representatives from each of the three agencies. If we follow the template of the South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District, which we're a member of, there's only one representative from each agency, one from AG, one from Grover, and one from Oceano. Now, maybe this JPA will have two from each agency. We'd send two board members from Oceano. It's not a budget that can be made independent of that, unlike the South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District that I spoke of, which has a independent revenue base.
It's a special district.
This fire agents, this JPA, and that's a district, by the way. This JPA won't. It's funded out of the three entities. So each entity must then be aware of how much they can afford to spend on fire-related services, because they all do things besides fire, just like us. So through that budget process, that is when the representative would say, you know, Oceano budgets is, or Oceano's revenue stream is, you know, just say 700,000, that's the number we've thrown out. The Oceano's revenue stream is 700,000, that's what we have. Whatever you do budget-wise, Oceano's share can be no greater than 700,000. That would be the role of the representative to say that, because basically all you have are your tax revenues to pledge. There are other incidental revenues, and that's how I got to the 800,000. There are other incidental revenues, but then there are other incidental costs. So I think what we're talking about is our tax, knowing our tax revenues and having to budget Oceano's share within that amount, unless something wonderful happens, like a vote on a special assessment or something. But outside of that, you're limited.
Yeah, and we also have, you know, out of this same revenue fund that we're getting, this is also supposed to pay for Parks and Rec and street lighting as well.
Very, very little goes to street lighting, and we have not done much on Parks and Recs in a long time.
Yeah.
And that's the decision of this board. But the only money, and I've said this all along to these gentlemen sitting out here, is we only have property tax, and I was hoping everybody here realized that too.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what somebody would say, this is what it's going to cost Oceano. We only have what comes from the property tax. And if it's more than that, no matter what we signed and said we were going to do, we can't do it, because it's against the law to take money from the enterprise funds. And those are the only two other places we have money. That's water and sewer. You know, we don't have parking that we collect from.
Why? Is it they're committing to something that we can't fund?
Well, I think the point is you can't commit to this. You won't commit to something
okay.
you can't fund. Because
right.
the budget can't pass until Oceano said, we can give you this much.
Okay.
They'll have to adjust the budget.
Got it.
And I'd like Chief Hubert to weigh into this, because we had those same concerns last night, and we said, what if, you know, the worst of all of our fears comes to pass, and we just get clobbered with this property tax? And I'd like you to kind of explain what you told us last night, because it set my mind at ease about how this would proceed.
The general manager stated to you about what you have before you tonight is the option to move forward is correct. The next step would be is to try to put together an agreement, which will come back to each of the agencies for your review and discussion, and then all those things would be stated in there. One of the documents that we're looking at to somewhat model after identifies that there is an annual budget that is to be developed based on the formula, the allocations, and then presented to the governing body, and then that would have to be presented to each of the district board and the councils. So really what you're agreeing to tonight is just to keep the process moving forward, and keep in mind that these numbers are preliminary. They're just it is just a draft budget, the best we could come up with. I'd like to just before I go into what some of the discussion last night, out of the staff report, Director Lucy, I got that what the general manager was just trying to state was that the annual revenues of the district for fire protection is $800,000. I didn't sense that he was utilizing that figure as the budget figure. I think the preliminary figure we've identified in the consolidated cost analysis cost comparison was the $719 figure. So.
Well, I was kind of reading into the words of
budgeted for your revenue stream, property tax, and then there's some incidental small stuff that comes in, weed abatement fees, fireworks applications.
Right.
As to last night's discussion, and I cannot speak for the general manager or the city managers, but Chief Heath and I have tried to put together some contingency plans if things did not work out the way we anticipated with everyone's budget this year and the state situation. And so, and I have not discussed these with the city managers or Kevin. Kevin heard it last night for the first time. But if the worst discussion between Chief Heath and myself is that if we, this thing had, the JPA had to be delayed until there was a better outlook, a better forecasting of the economy, we could form the JPA and become that one single entity, but operate as we are currently with the three budgets and the three legislative or governing boards, councils and board. So we, that's not as desirous as putting the JPA together and becoming, you know, having one budget and moving towards greater standardization as a single entity. But we, as I stated, Chief Heath and I have gone down that road and tried to do a little forecasting, planning. Did I cover that?
Yes, you did.
Okay. We asked all the questions before I open it to the public. Okay. Any public comment? Any public comment? Vern, reach me my timer, please.
Hi. This must be an important meeting. You had me in slacks for the first time in a long time, and actually shoes. My name is Rick Grensick. I am a resident of Pismo Beach, and it's an honor to address your board this evening, and I really thank you for your time. I stand before you with well over 30 years of direct involvement in the emergency services in the South County. Due to an injury that I had, I am a number of decades. There was a lot of camaraderie and challenging between the fire departments, Oceano, Arroyo Grande, Grover, Pismo Beach. It was always, and you know, it was kind of a cooperative kind of challenging and things, and we had a lot of fun doing it. We actually trained together for a number of years. There were also a few of those years where Oceano was going sideways on us, and people actually weren't training with Oceano. That was then. This is now. Currently, I have to commend the incredible dedication and the professional commitment of the Oceano firefighters. Truly, from my perspective, I'm very impressed. I also have to commend the firefighters of Grover and Arroyo Grande, as well as the chief officers that have been overseeing these consolidation efforts. Everybody has been working their tail off, and I think the commitment to the community shows. As you know, both the councils of AG and Grover have approved continuing forward in this JPA. Now it's your turn. As one of the primary functions of the Oceano Community Service District, I contend that providing emergency services is probably the most critical component of your duties. Now let's talk about the money. This is a reality that all of us have to face. Like all of us in this room, we have all been faced with budgetary challenges. The OSD or OCSD has financial challenges just like we do. Like all of us, we've looked at our personal finances and we go, okay, where can we cut back? What can we do? Where can we save a few bucks? personally, I think that you guys can really take a look at your budgetary process and find funding where you may not have been looking, or you kind of like, well, that works for us now, and this is... personally, I believe the $140,000 that is charged to against the fire department for administrative costs is
your time is about up, sir.
Okay, thank you. Another idea you might consider is all of a sudden having self-insurance for the JPA, where you actually charge people for fire insurance.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other public comment?
Good evening, PJ Ferguson, Local 4403, President. We're trying to move this forward, and we see ourselves as being partners in the process. And we'll look forward to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Matt Milhauser.
You need to wait a minute for my timer.
Oh, okay.
Two timers.
Yeah, I have to buy a second timer. Since somebody's
doesn't
fast.
Work too well.
I won't be long. So.
Oh, well, just wait a minute. Okay. I want to treat everybody equally fair. But
While we're waiting, I might say that the city manager of Grover Beach, Bob Peralt, and city manager of Varroa Grande, Steve Adams, have been very much concerned that we involve the firefighters, the men on the floor from the very get-go and at all stages in this, and they especially wanted to ensure they weren't left out of any step of the process and were communicated along the way.
Okay, now you're on.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Matt Milhauser. I am representing the Five Cities Firefighters Association, whose members are the reserve firefighters from Oro Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano Fire Departments. We would just like to voice our support for the JPA, and we also recognize the benefits that it will provide the fire department and as well as the community that we serve. I'd like to thank everybody for the hard work that has gone into the JPA, and we look forward to the future.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay. Bring it back to the board for any other comment.
I just have a couple of budgetary comments. I'll look at the authors of the budget. On the weed abatement, it has $5,000 arrears going, and then I see that you have it in the JPA. So if we add more community cooperation, could you say if by chance the budget comes in low, that is a line item that can be worked with? I'm just trying to come up with a little bit of extra money in my head.
Potentially.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then I have one other question on the workman's comp. Arroyo Grande is at 31 plus. And then Grover Beach is at 67 plus, and then Oceano is at 35,000.
Pair each agency, how they get to each one of these line items specifically in the benefit portion. So the 67,900 is for Grover Beach is a methodology that they utilize to get that number. And the Rio Grande and Oceano came up with their figures. Now, in the future, we need to contact our agency that will give us an insurance figure. But these figures were what currently each agency is paying for their workers' compensation.
Okay.
That the ultimate figure may be different.
So if you say it's fair, I'm just trying to think about this down the road. So would you say it would be fair to probably go with like a 5% difference in the line items, some that aren't as relevant, say as, I wouldn't compare like salaries to weed abatement, but could you say that just, you know, mentally I can work like 5% either way per line item. Not with the salary, though. The salary and Benny's not included.
You could...
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yes. Under the operating supplies...
Yes.
I think you could probably do that.
So add you're saying?
No.
Where it stops with with office supplies.
Okay.
I think you could do that through the remainder of the budget.
Okay.
And whether it's 5% up or 5% down.
Yeah.
There could be, again, this is just a rough. Budget. So there may be some, we may have more cost efficiencies in certain line items than others, and other anticipated costs that we just didn't identify. But I think under the operating supplies, which I would start at office supplies, through the remainder of the budget, you could do that 5%, give or take.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Vern, do you have anything else?
Yeah.
The workers' compensation costs are much smaller for the reserve personnel than it is the paid personnel.
Okay. So, in workers' comp, is based on the amount of salary being paid. It's still done that way, I believe.
I'm not a finance person, but I believe that's accurate.
Okay. And the amount of payroll in Arroyo Grande is larger than the other two agencies, correct?
That's correct.
And workers' comp is also based on experience, or how many claims have been placed against it in the past. Is that why we're looking at such a smaller number for Arroyo Grande when their payroll is higher?
I think we're asking the wrong folks.
Well,
I don't have anybody else to ask.
Okay, the understanding that I have, and I'll between, at least Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, is that the costs are spread out between all the employees of the city, and the agencies charge back to each department what they feel are appropriate costs. Mm-hmm. So when we contact workers' compensation carrier, we may come back with totally different numbers.
So we don't have really a...
These numbers are what each of the finance departments gave us as their best representation of current costs.
Okay. So we don't have any idea what it would be in the future.
Probably an apple.
Yeah, okay. Health insurance is another issue. When in joining in a JPA, I guess all these health insurance and workers' comp is all going to go under one policy then. Is that correct, or is that going to stay with each agency?
No, that's what I was going to say. Arroyo Grande is going to be the employer.
Okay.
Personnel.
So how much health benefits are received by each employee will be part of the MOU and part of
That's
the...
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So we're looking at, probably for us, we're looking at quite an increase in this area, would be my guess.
Not us, the firefighters.
Well, for our, but for our budget.
I think that we should invite Mr. Steve Adams to come over because he, I believe, is the basic... person that put this together. Yeah. Am I correct?
Yeah, he was the one that put together this document, but
yeah.
All the information came from all three agencies.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he combined it, so that's who we, if you have some specific questions, we need to ask Steve if he could perhaps come over and answer them for us.
Okay.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to direct staff to, one, proceed with the formation of the Fire Joint Powers Authority, the JPA, and two, to designate the Fire Oversight Committee as the interim JPA Board of Directors for the purposes of providing direction to labor negotiators to prepare a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, with the Firefighters Union.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mary. Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, thanks for the information you brought forward, too. We appreciate the,
okay.
The information.
I've been asked for a 5-minute break, so we'll resume at 8 o'clock.
Start, and then okay. Captain Bova has some information
okay.
that I don't, and so he'll finish out the report. Some time ago, Captain Bova helped the district obtain an action writer. He's not a civil engineer, but he did do that work for us, and it was good work. At that point, he had thought he was be able to proceed with just getting three quotes or three bids in a somewhat informal process for doing that work. Before proceeding, though, he decided to contact our attorney, and appropriately so, and ask if we were legally headed in the right direction, making sure we were in compliance with all laws. Now, the requirements of the grant are quite simple in this regard, and that is that you follow your own purchasing procedures. I want each agency that receives one of these to follow their own purchasing procedures. Apparently, our purchasing procedure would allow for us to get request offers without using a formal bid process. However, your legal counsel, district general counsel, has recommended that you use a more formal bid process. Which would include things like obtaining a performance bond and labor and material bond and having language in a bid document that made sure the liabilities and risk were appropriately assigned and things like that. So that is the counsel from the district's attorney. So at that point, we contacted John Wallace Group, who is the district engineer, since they're very well versed in preparing bid packages, specifications, and technical provisions, and asked them for some assistance and a cost for that assistance, which actually I believe to be somewhat minimal, in the hundreds of dollars range, not in the tens of thousands of dollars range. The engineer, as represented by Doug Grosshardt, who's here tonight and in the audience to speak on another agenda item, he can talk on this if we need to, met with John Bova later this afternoon, Captain Bova, and discussed proceeding on this. So I'm going to turn it over to John, and he can give you more information, update on.
Thanks, Kevin. You covered it very well.
Covered it all.
Most of it. What I have done is submitted
On obtaining quotes or bids or offers to do the work.
Yeah, so the attorney had raised the question or suggested that we go with a more formal bid, which would be fine. So I started doing a little research to find out what other cities and communities have done, and I found some that were did not declare them to be public works contracts, and then I found some that did declare them to be public works contracts, and I have examples of both that I've given the engineers at Wallace and Associates. So they've done it. Certain communities have done it both ways, and it's basically up to the individual municipality how they want to declare that.
Can I ask? Is this it? Question time?
Yeah, I'm available for questions.
You can ask a question.
Okay. Well, you said, do you have any questions?
I'm asked.
Are they looking for subcontractors or bidders that follow Davis-Bacon rules and laws?
I'm not familiar with Davis-Bacon rules and laws.
Is it? You are.
Prevailing wage.
You are.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I think we follow prevailing wages.
Prevailing wages.
Prevailing wage laws.
Yeah, it all falls into the Davis-Bacon laws, and I think that is probably more important, which will dictate how you proceed forward if that's what they're looking for.
If that's who's looking for, who's looking
your
for?
Your funder.
The funding.
You need to get bids, and you need to do it by the policies based on your area. Correct.
Correct. The federal government is only concerned that we use our purchasing guidelines.
They want us to follow Davis-Bacon laws. Usually, on any kind of public funds, they want you to follow those rules, which includes salaries, how much you get an hour, you know, in other words, they don't want you to work with a vendor who 1099s everybody and doesn't pay anybody over $6 an hour. So that's really very important to these funders, especially when you're using public funds.
Director Lucy, I think it's important to point out that the funding has already been secured.
The money's there. It's ready to go. It's just a matter of getting the bids for the appropriate work.
Right, and I'm speaking to what's the appropriate work. When you're looking for subcontractors for public funds, if they comply with the Davis-Bacon laws, that's really more relevant to them than if...
And specifications, which is a boilerplate... insurance requirements, requirements for bid, things like that of the company that is going to bid, qualifications. It's boilerplate that each district or city may have. You already have that, and it's written, and we already have sections that address Davis-Bacon, things like that, because of the ongoing sewer project. So that is already basically done. So an RFP is usually your front end docs and then your technical provisions, which Captain Bove has already done. So it's going to be a pretty seamless procedure. Not knowing, I just got the information today on the specific grant. We'll make sure that it's addressed in the front end documents. If it's not already in there, we will add that to it. But it's a modification, not a creation of the front-end documents, so it'll be a pretty minimal exercise.
Okay. Do you have any time frame on this?
We can do it whenever. Kevin has requested pricing from us, so that was the first step, was for me to meet with Captain Bova today. I'll take it back, look at the information he gave me, and let General Manager Walsh know how much time it will take us cost-wise and then also schedule, but it won't be long.
Because I know that we need to get moving on it.
Yes.
Yeah, we won't stand in the way of getting anything done. It's basically already done from what he's already done so much stuff that there's very little for us to do.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you once again for all your hard work, Captain Hogan. We really, really do appreciate it. And you'll get it. I had a dream.
So we're just continuing... staff's already.
This is just a status report.
Yeah.
You know how we're proceeding and where we're headed. If you wanted to give other direction, then I would need to receive that.
I think you have the correct direction.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Utility items 8, cleaning inspection of the district sewer and water lines. Public contract code section 22050C1 requires that if the governing body orders any action after the emergency has been declared, The governing body shall review the emergency action at its next regularly scheduled meeting and at every regularly scheduled meeting thereafter until the action is terminated.
To the close of it, though.
Yeah, just
about. We are coming to the close.
Okay, looking for a motion, please.
I would move that we continue the disclosure of the emergency declared by the Board of Directors concerning the cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water mains.
Second.
Thank you. I need roll call on this, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? Director Lucy? President Mann?
Yes.
Yes. I was trying.
I apologize.
That's okay.
Going too fast.
Change order number 4 on the sewer rehabilitation project. Kevin, would you like to?
Yes. When the sewer rehabilitation program was first being considered, we did not have enough money to do all the segments that we desired to do, that we really thought should be remedied. However, we did think that perhaps something nice would happen. Additional funding might be available someday. There could be a chance that would happen. And so in the original bid documents that were prepared, there was an alternate that each contractor bid on for doing the additional work, the additional 5 segments. By the time that it came to award the bids, there was still not that additional money available, so those additional segments were not authorized to be completed. Again, the anticipation was maybe something will happen such that we can fund those additional segments at a later date. Well, as it turns out, that the Disaster Recovery Initiative funding, DRI as we call it, that was awarded to some other entities was able to be redirected towards Oceano. And so we've been advised by the county that there is enough additional funding for the 5 segments that were left out of the original bid on the rehabilitation. Now, that funding is subject to an agreement or contract between the county and State Department of Housing. That contract hasn't not been signed yet, so you can't quite say the money's well in hand. However, there is a somewhat short time fuse. There's a window to award that additional work when the money came in. So that's what is before you here, is this change order number 4 for those additional bid items.
Kevin, can you talk to us a little bit more about the State Department of Housing? I've never heard of them. I just want to know what division they would be in. And they're not in the Department of Health. I just never heard of them. So is it a use it or lose it situation? Is it redirecting the money? Because you mentioned the State Department of Housing.
Whichever agency was supposed to use
that's
it.
But my understanding is it's FEMA money, which is federal money. And so is it redirecting funds?
That they couldn't use.
It's redirecting funds. It's Doug to come up here.
I'm sorry I'm asking these questions. I just like to know sources.
Yeah.
Right. There was some changing, and let me preface this with, we have a planning department that handles a lot of this, the intricacies of the agencies, dealing with the agencies. So I am going to speak somewhat secondhand, but there was some changing of the guard, so to speak, into what agency different areas were under, FEMA being one, or Disaster Recovery Initiative, is now under Housing and Urban Development,
which is
federal, correct. Mm-hmm. Right.
But.
Right.
So, okay. So.
And then CDBG.
Okay, which is the Community Development Block.
Correct.
Which comes out of HUD.
Right.
Which is federal funds.
Right.
Sometimes matched by state, but not often. And then, so, but
the department, the California State Department of Housing?
It's my understanding that it's actually federal.
So there isn't a department that's called
I don't believe so.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I had thought when I could have misunderstood. I thought when I talked to Tony Navarro at the county planning that there was...
Easy mistake.
There may have been state, and that's why I'm saying I'm second, sometimes third-hand information, because we don't actually deal with them.
They decided to award it to somebody who was ready to use it and needed it, and we were the lucky people.
That's a state policy. It's a use it or lose it by July 1st.
And so. you are in the same situation now,
yeah.
Even if you use it, if you don't use it all up, because... this entire scope, and that's why we did this the way that we did it, was because we thought that there was going to be some other funding available down the line. So we permitted, had all the reports done and everything for 23 segments.
Yeah.
Our initial base bid, we were very conservative and said, okay, we're going to make 10 segments your base bid, and then we itemized each of the additional 13 as additive alternates.
Yeah.
Then the funding available at that time allowed us to do 10 base bid and 8 additive alternates. So there are 5 left. This funding became available. It's already bid. R. Baker Incorporated was the low bidder for the base bid and for all of the additive alternates that we did on the original contract execution and for these 5 segments. They were the low. We went back at the suggestion of district council and reviewed the bid for that so that we were sure that everyone had a fair shake. From a bid standpoint.
So your funding stream is the same?
Correct.
Okay.
It's the same. They basically took it out of one pot and put it in another pot, and we get to get it all done. And if there's anything left at the end, we give it back. And we can't add anything more because we'll run out of time. We haven't permitted anything else.
Well, before you give anything back, talk to somebody.
Well, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that... there are certain percentages designated and required for things like design or monitoring or things like that. And we may have gone over that prescribed percentage, but there is a possibility that we can adjust that percentage. If funds are still available, we can possibly move it to a different section.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky to get everything we requested at the beginning of the year. For we said we'd need between 400,000 and 500,000 to complete the project to the extent of everything permitted, and we were the additional funds total $431,444.
And this will increase the quality of life for the people on the Strand so much.
It isn't the Strand, know. Is it the Strand?
It's mostly
yes, it is.
Yeah.
Earthquake that did the damage.
Yeah. So do you ever think that this side of the railroad tracks will ever be assessed for, like, some of our sagging streets or, you know, maybe those waves that come up on Beach Street sometimes? It's amazing, you know, after just a quick rain. You think there's hope for that side someday?
If you have
honestly,
another earthquake
not my area of expertise.
Okay,
I could
good
not
answer.
Hazard a guess.
Good answer. Thank you.
So is it correct, then, that we've been able to fund from
Earth's
outside of the district all the damages, the cost of all the damages from the earthquake now?
On that side.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The damages for all the all the damages that was done in the earthquake, the repair costs for all of those damages, did any of the money come from the district itself, or was it all funded through grants and so outside of the district?
Prior to Wallace Group's reinstatement as district engineer, I do not know, because that's when it happened. We were not district engineers. I believe those were emergency FEMA funds that for things that, like the line behind Jetty,
yeah,
that was relined. I believe those were all covered by that. Everything on this project has been paid in up front by the district to be reimbursed by the grants, is how it works. Mm-hmm. You pay, then you submit. and then they pay you.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's right.
But ultimately, we've been able to get all the money from outside of the district for all these earthquake repairs.
That's if we're reimbursed.
So far, we've been reimbursed.
Well, everything we've submitted for reimbursement, we've received.
And we scoped the project according to the, well, Gearing, previous district engineers scoped the project based on need. We revisited it and then scaled the project from a base bid standpoint based on funds available, but then tried to two birds, one stone approach to get as much permitted ahead of time because there was so much paperwork involved in the hopes that this would come true, that additional funding would be available.
And just out of curiosity, not to cause any waves or anything like that, but there is a section that was that I think it was Wilmar and maybe 23rd to 21st or something, where it was really, really, you know, it was, the water was just pooling really bad there on Wilmar. And they were considered a priority, and the money was allocated by the county, and then whoosh, gone. You know, and nothing ever happened in that area.
Is that a water line or is that a sewer line? I'm not familiar. That's a
sitting water.
It was a drainage issue.
It was an earthquake issue.
But it was drainage.
And it was considered a priority. I'll ask you to maybe check and see what happened there.
On that drainage issue? Yeah, I will.
You know, because it is really bad over in that area. The people literally open their front doors, open their garage doors, open their back doors, and let the water go through. And not that I haven't done it myself, but, you know, it's just the nature of the beast on this side of the tracks. But that area was really bad.
Before you leave, I just have a question on the timing because it's very, I mean, we don't have a very long time frame to get all of this work done. Does it look like we'll get the extension? I mean, even a month isn't very much more time to do this.
I believe we were initially given October 30th, and then it was September 30th, and then it's maybe October 30th, and now maybe it's the end of the year. Nothing has been signed. But I will say I still think we can get it done even if it were September 30th. But we need to have all our ducks in a row once those agreements are executed, regardless of the date, and that's why we're here.
Exactly.
Do you think we could invoice in this fiscal year, even though the work is not completed July 1st? Even though the plans have been approved, you've been accepted, is that unreasonable to at least invoice in this fiscal year?
We're already in the new fiscal year.
No, we're not. Oh, yeah,
yes,
we are.
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought you meant like pre-July 1, and I was...
Yeah. No, you can't.
I think we've all the work to date
was in
last year.
I take that back.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't wear a clock or a calendar.
Well,
we've tried to be prompt on our submittal for reimbursements.
Yeah.
And the county's been very, very good about helping us get it pushed through, too.
I think they walk them through, even.
Yep.
They have, They have... A lot of praise to Tony Navarro, county staff.
Okay. What do we need to do on this now?
So our recommended action.
Yeah, on my staff report recommendations, right on the first page, number two, your motion would be, as it reads there, direct staff to authorize R. Baker to perform the required additional work as detailed in the original document, contingent upon the district executing pending amendment agreements with HUD and the County of San Luis Obispo.
And this was, just to add one more thing here, that wording.
Oh, any public comment? Seeing none. bring it back to the board for a motion.
I would move that we direct staff to authorize R. Baker to perform the required additional work as detailed in the original document as a contract change order contingent upon the district executing pending amendment agreements with HUD and the County of San Luis Obispo.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Thank you. Let's skip down to the status report on water and sewer so that... I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, this is the Wallace Group will be making that presentation.
I'm Doug Grosshart, Wallace Group. This is my second meeting in a row with three items, or second time I've been here with three items in a row. Happy to be here.
You want us to get your nameplate?
Sure.
You can do it.
Just a beacon in the night would be great. A bat signal. So.
You have the pace for street lighting if you want that.
There you go. I had something to discuss with you on that street lighting. Before
all
I forget.
Right. Meet after the meeting.
All right. So, to receive a report from District Engineer regarding status of the ongoing work, water and sewer master plans, I'd like to slightly amend it to also include rate studies, because those three are all going together.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
To start with the water. Water and wastewater, we are in the last... I would say couple of days of in-house review of the two plans for water and wastewater, and we will be providing them to the district for your review and comment. But I'd like to give you a basic preview of the coming attractions of what will be. One is that we agree, we concur with Gehring's assessment of projects that need to be done. Some of them have already been done in between Gehring's report and our report. They span the water. There are many water line increases recommended that span the entire district, both east and west of the tracks. And in every case, the replacement recommendation is due to a lack of fire flow. And it's not based on currently being undersized or future projection of being undersized. It's that required fire flow is not available. Mm-hmm. So there are several segments all over the district. One recommendation that we will be making, and this is just, again, a report, and it's nothing you need to accept right now. I just wanted to give you the heads up. We will include in our report a recommendation, as did Gehring in the previous report, that you participate in the drought buffer program with the county. But whether you...
Can you say some more about that?
Whether you accept it or not, that's up to you. You enter into an agreement with the county. Currently, you have no real need for it because you have a surplus of water. But there, you never know.
Okay, so, can you tell us what more about it? What is it?
Do you want to speak more directly on that? I don't attend that.
Well, sure. Okay. The County of San Luis Obispo obtained an allotment of state water greater than any of the water purveyors in the county enlisted for that supply. So they have quite a bit of surplus water. And they operate a drought. Are you talking about the county's drought
buffer?
Correct. Yeah.
County.
So because the county has a surplus of state water to deliver, they have chosen to develop a drought contingency or drought buffer, drought program for the people that are subscribers to the state water, which includes Oceano, of course. It's offered to those, that water then, when it's available, is offered to those member agencies first, and then on a month-to-month basis. Then if that water is refused, the Obispo is sold in most years, except the very wettest of years, to Santa Barbara County. So I haven't seen your report, but I'm assuming what they're recommending is that Oceano begin to participate at some level in that drought program to increase the reliability of our state water deliveries.
I have a question. Right now, we pay for state water that isn't given to us. What you buy, you can't run through the pipes right. as it is. So are we going to be paying for more water that we cannot receive?
No, this would be paying for water you can receive. You know, actually, you bring up a very good point. We have to keep reminding ourselves. I have to keep reminding myself. In California, the water is free. You just go get it. It's the going and the getting that cost you the money. So what we're paying for is the pipeline.
Well, right now, we're paying for a pipeline that is not large enough to allow us to take the amount of water we've purchased.
The state pipeline is large enough. There's some capacity issues between the state delivery point and Oceano, basically the Lopez.
Oh, okay. So
turnout.
It's a Lopez.
Yeah.
But again, we're paying for water that we cannot get because the lines are not big enough.
Basically, that statement's true.
So why would we even consider saying we'll buy some more when there's no chance of us ever being able to use it?
This December, the state allotment was 10% of your supply. Now, by the time May and June rolled around, the allotment was increased to 40%. But even at 40%, there's still additional capacity that is unused. It's when we're up near that 80, 90, and certainly at 100% that situation that you speak of is so very true. In other words, we have more water that we can access than we have delivery capacity for. But those smaller state allotments down in that 40 and 50% range, there's more water that we could get. The capacity exists to deliver more than that.
Which would happen in the event of a drought. You would correct your lowered state allotment percentages would occur.
Participate in that program. And then when the allotment did go from 10 to 40, we were able to breathe much more smoothly. If it had remained in 10, I think at 10%, I think we might have wanted to revisit that earlier decision.
And so if you have ongoing drought conditions, then it's just something to always have in the back of your mind that you have that there to exercise. And I'm not is it annual exercising at the beginning of the year?
Annual. Mm-hmm. It's a year-to-year thing.
And it doesn't cost if we don't exercise it?
No, it doesn't cost if you don't. It costs if you do.
Okay.
But is that like the water if we decide that we're going to do it, but we don't receive any water, we're still going to pay?
No.
Or we're only going to pay for the water?
Only in the drought program,
receive.
You'd only pay for the water you receive.
You'd basically you'd get in line to be able to purchase the water, but that what your cost now is to pay for that pipeline, and that pipeline is already there. Is that?
No.
Yeah. The pipeline's there, but it's still being paid for.
Right.
Forever.
Yeah.
Pipeline
mm-hmm.
and the treatment plant, both.
The treatment plant, yeah.
The Colonial Pass treatment plant. Yeah. I said Shandon earlier. I was trying to say Colonial Pass.
I'm sorry. I'd like to go back to the plan.
So that's our supply preview. The storage preview, with just to give you kind of a highlight of what we're looking at with possible capital improvement projects, on the supply side, it'll be line size increase based on fire flow need.
Let me ask you about supply on demand. My understanding is that for the water, and I'm sure this includes the water yard as well, your master plan, right?
Correct. It's the entire water system.
That we have enough water that, say, for example, if something was to catastrophically happen, which I can't think of, but anyway, if there was a catastrophic Mother Nature thing or something like that, we have enough water to hold this town for 24 hours.
The water in
yes or no?
In terms, well, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but
the one well we have up there.
You have plenty of wells.
The one tank.
The one tank that we have.
Okay.
It's like 495 gallons or something. I don't know.
They store it, so then it's that addresses tanks, and then it's the water lines, or in some situations you'd have pumps. It's supplying it to the town. So when I say supply in this instance, it's the water lines, the pipelines, not the wells.
And
the wells will be addressed in the plan, but there's really nothing to talk about from a preview standpoint.
And would the master plan also include the quality of the water, or does it go near that?
Yes, it'll address, especially if it were a really high concern, it would definitely address it more so than if it's. It of course it'll address it in yours because there's the reporting required, the monthly reporting for the selenium, and so we address that in the report as well. It's all part of your supply would be quality in terms of the water quality and then quantity in the supply in that you have well-wise.
All right, because you know, recently I called Los Angeles and asked them, is there a grading system for the quality of their water, right? And they said, yeah, ours is a 5, because I had to go spend some money and go buy a water softener, right? Because, I mean, it was our house was being destroyed. And so I called the district and I said, so what's ours? And they go, 27. So no wonder the pipes are being eaten away, our skin's being eaten away, you can't get water in your eyes or anything. So does it include the quality like that, or does it include, we buy a bunch of chemicals to filter out that brown or that white stuff, that powdery stuff that's coming out of your pipes?
If it were to a level...
I just need to know, kind of like, what does the plan include? Does it include anything that offers to the quality of our life or not? Or is it just a internal document that gets stuck in a cubbyhole in the office and we can show you the water lines?
No. It definitely addresses quality of life issues, but perhaps on a different spin on that. In terms of fire flow, that's the most vital, would be being able to provide fire flow to all reaches of the district.
Okay.
So that's first and foremost, it would be the public safety issue. Then the water quality is recommend and deal with reverse osmosis or whatever you'd like to do to treat the water, but it comes at a pretty good cost.
And then it's up to the board, after you submit your plan, then it's up to the board to actually vote on it. And then maybe follow the plan?
Yeah, that's right. I would agree.
We have to.
So are we going to write policies in place that, like, actually enforce it? Because that seems to be something that's left off the end all the time. Like, we pass these policies and procedures and then make it up as we go along, issue by issue way. And so I'd like to see, you know, we put a lot of money into the master plan. We've had a great planner, people working on it, and then they don't follow it.
Well, what I see with this master plan is that we are setting forth what our plan is for the future and mm-hmm. what our revenues will be directed to as far as completing our infrastructure, and that's part of our rate study. And we want to make reserves to go to fixing some of those things that have been let go for all of these years. So I consider it a part and parcel of, our reserve program, our rate study, everything that goes. So it is all-encompassing, and I'm glad we're finally addressing this and dealing with it because it's sat on the back burner for many, since 2004.
Yeah.
It was never endorsed. It was never put into effect, and now we really are going to do it. So I'm with you. It has to happen.
Yeah, because it's costing us,
Do you take into consideration all the bottled water? You know, anybody who has any immune system problems living in this town cannot drink that water. You know, I mean, so it is a health hazard to some people. You know, and I don't know if your plan takes that into consideration.
I haven't seen what it was like before we got statewide.
Yeah. So, okay.
This all goes in, and if I could recommend, what we usually recommend is you have your master plan, and then when you create your budget, your annual budget as part of your administrative budget, and then you have your ongoing maintenance budget, and then your capital improvements budget. And so rate study will take into account, we provide Tuckfield & Associates, the company that's doing the rate study, we provide them with all of your fiscal information, but then we also, it's a plan. It's, we look at the most dire of circumstances, prioritize those as highly as possible, and try to get those done first, but we spread it all out as evenly as we can and still get them done in due course.
Do you know if the plan is recommending the increase of the size or the flow capacity of the main pipeline coming into the community from the drop-off point of the state water?
As far as I... And again, I need to make my final review of the plan as well. But that was not an issue with the district. Okay. Was the from a supply standpoint in terms of wells and state water, you're fine for current conditions and for projected conditions.
Okay, good.
If we're back to what we're going to be recommending is on the 300,000 gallon tank. Within the next 5 years, we recommend looking into relining or recoating that tank because there are some potential corrosion issues there. Also, you've got some localized, just in certain areas on the exterior of both tanks, at the top, some of the rungs, something you're going to want to look at, and there are consultants that will do an analysis of the coating of your tank, and they can do it without taking it out of service. They'll actually dive into the tank bleached up and assess your tank for you, provide you with a report, and it's relatively inexpensive. So it's
and then it comes through our pipes into our house.
Well, it's chlorinated.
They're in wetsuits. They wash down with a bleach
solution. I'm sure they're cleaner than what's coming through now.
Into the tank.
And then on the sewer, the collection system with the earthquake repairs that we've been undertaking, it's looking good from a capacity standpoint. And on a positive, we did a lift station assessment of your lift station, and it was installed in 1966, I believe. And Steve Tanaka, our director of water resources, did the lift station analysis, and he was amazed at how good it looked, and he said that your operations staff should be commended, Phil and Max, and the staff should be commended for their maintaining of that lift station that's over 40 years old, and it looks great. And they've recently recoated the wet well, I believe. One recommendation that they'll make is if and when that lift station needs to be replaced, which we don't foresee, the method in which the next meeting we could do it, depending on how quickly you can review and comment and get it back to us, and we can take into consideration what you've said. And then we will provide that final plan to Tuckfield, and they will complete the rate study. It depends on their workload when we get the plan to them, but it would be within a month, maybe 2 months. But that's what we're looking at.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
Okay, proposal for the preparation of the 2010 annual groundwater report. Kevin.
Yes, the board has considered a lot of groundwater items lately that have to do with the 2009 effort. And the annual report that was required this year and the follow-up and some of the issues that we're facing currently. That's not what this is about. This is about the 2010 report. And I've given a little background there on the Santa Maria Valley groundwater litigation to how we got to where we're at. But basically every year from now until forever, You're going to have to do annual monitoring and an annual report to the court. You're going to have to tell the court about the monitoring you're done and about other things that are going on in the basin. So with that background, this is a proposal to prepare the 2010 report. That report is due in the early spring of each year, and it summarizes the year before. So I've called it the 2010 report because that's when we'll submit it to the court, but it will really cover the calendar year 2009, which is not over yet, obviously. We're still in 2009. So some of the work that you have talked about doing here and follow up to your 2009 would be reported out to the court in 2010. We are in what's known as the Northern Cities Management Area. We share that with Pismo Beach, Grover City, or Grover Beach, and the Rio Grande. And so our share is 22% because we take 22% of the groundwater. So it's about a $43,000 expenditure for 2010.
And so each year it will cost more?
Each year it's going to cost more. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think they probably do. We want to make sure. We want to make sure
that they did.
Yeah. And is Todd Engineering the only ones that submitted a proposal?
Todd Engineers is who you have used from the get-go on the Santa Maria litigation, which has been going on for over a decade now. Mm-hmm. And
you're kind of in this gentleman's agreement.
You're kind of in this together with the four other cities, and no one has expressed any desire to change horses in the middle of the stream at this point, and everyone seems satisfied with the work that Dr. Priestaff is doing for us.
We'd probably only have a 22% vote on that.
It's not a weighted vote, so.
No, but I mean.
We're one out of four. Mm-hmm. We're one out of four votes, 25%.
Okay. So you need from us an okay to?
Yeah, recommended action is to approve our cost share of the 2010. That'll allow Todd Engineers to begin preparation of that report.
Any questions by the board? Any public comment? Seeing no public comment, bringing it back to the board.
I move that we authorize the expenditure of funds for the 2010 groundwater monitoring effort and the court-ordered annual report.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Hill? Director Lucy?
No.
President Mann?
Yes. All right. Takes care of that. Administrative items.
I think that we, did we skip over something?
No, I came back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We skipped over this item we just took up, and now we circled back and got it.
Administrative items, Grant Ryder, Randall Funding and Development.
I wish I had something to report. I have been playing phone tag with Randall and Development, and as much as my fault as anybody's, but I made another call this afternoon, and he's been calling back rather promptly, so...
Okay.
Next meeting. I'm going to schedule this for next meeting. And if something happens sooner, I'll put it in my Friday report.
Okay. Old business. No status change on. I attended the sanitation meeting last week because Jim wasn't able to. And there was a little confusion in the posting of where the meeting was to be held. It was to be held... in the posting it said at the plant, but everybody came here because everybody, including yours truly, didn't read what the agenda said. So we gathered here and we had to go over to the plant. And one of the things on the agenda, the main thing was the approving of the budget for next year. And then there's a little place and it's a public hearing on the budget. And then the inside when you open the budget documents, it says public hearing to be held at OCSD. So the public hearing was scheduled here. The meeting was scheduled over there, so they had to reschedule it. So the budget, next Wednesday night, there's a public hearing on the budget for the sanitation department. And that was basically...
The two Wednesdays, right? Because we have five Wednesdays.
Oh, okay. We have five Wednesdays this month. It'll be the first meeting they have in...
First Wednesday of the month.
Yeah. That will be there.
In August, yeah.
So if you're interested in the budget, it looked all right. They did have the one thing that they did have in there, that there were no raises over there. And, of course, I commented on that, you know, to be sure that, yes, that was going to... There would be no raises because of the economy. And then they're talking about another raise in the rates, which they had planned on. So that was the Sand District. It was just kind of funny about, I came here, and Mike came out, and he says, oh, you're at the wrong place. Go over to the plant. So I drive over to the plant, and here sits Jeff, who's their maintenance chief, and he says, oh, no, you're supposed to be over at the district. And I said, no, they just told me to come over here. And he didn't believe me until Mike got there and said, yes, we're now coming over here. And so then everybody followed. It was
crazy.
I thought it was pretty funny, but I don't know about them. Tamla, we already talked about the street lighting, where we are on that and what we're doing. It'll be being brought back to you guys for... A comment was we had a very interesting presentation from Cambria's general manager, Tammy, on 218, and gave us all the information they had. They really have a little book on how to do it and all the rules, and because they did it twice, I think.
Twice or three times?
Three times, two or three times. So they've got it down pat. And they said we were welcome to use everything that they had gathered on the rules.
The state code is unclear in some, surprise, surprise, unclear in some places, ambiguous. So they developed these guidelines so that their public might know the process and understand it up front, and that things weren't done on the fly. And after having gone through it two other times or one other time and having it unwound on them in an unpleasant fashion, they wanted their public to know, here's how your protests are going to be made, here's how the hearings will be conducted, you know, and very much detailed, yeah. Which is very good.
Yeah,
in,
that was excellent.
A code section that it isn't, quite honestly, isn't clear in some places.
Yeah, so when we get, when or if we have to do a 218,
right.
We have the Bible on it now. So
we can go to school on Cambria.
Yeah.
Cambria,
and,
I guess.
Yeah,
guess.
Yeah, and she said she'd be more than happy to answer any questions we might have. Because one they did, the protest succeeded. And then once that they did it, and then it was turned over by their new board of directors... And then the third time, and it's now successful. So that was the big thing at the meeting, and it was just well worth the time. Jim's not here tonight. Vern?
Yes. On July 15th, I attended the Airport Land Use Commission, and... there was a rep from Chevron there that announced that there's going to be a scoping meeting for the EIR on the property west of the San Luis Obispo Airport. It's on the scoping meeting will be on July 29th at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Chambers in San Luis Obispo. And that's on that open land that Chevron owns that's going to be turned into open space around the airport. And San Luis Obispo Airport is going to be all projects within 20,000 feet perimeter around the airport.
So, Vern, can I ask if you elaborate just a little bit more and see, is that going to affect our residents in that area, any development in that area, or a dune buggy going down the sand?
No, it's for development, like the first one of these forms was handed out to the sanitation plant. To the sanitation district here on a project that they're putting in, and they'll have to fill the form out. It's probably not going to be a big ordeal. We don't know, you know, it's the county staff is working on the process now for Oceano, so how, you know, how big the perimeter is going to have to be around the airport in Oceano, I don't know, but what they're looking for is tall items that are sticking up into the you know, into the air to make sure that it's not a navigation hazard for the pilots, along with things
like two stories or something.
Yeah, well, it'll be anything. You know, it depends on how close to the airport you get. The closer the airport you get, the lower that ceiling is.
Okay.
They're also looking for things that may cause problems to pilots, like something with large reflective surfaces or so. Just like the, that was an issue with the with the solar panels that were being put in at the winery there close to the approach to the airport in San Luis, and then, you know, because it had to have a surface on it that wouldn't reflect, so it didn't blind pilots coming in.
Right.
Okay. We also had a couple items that were before us as in a hearing, and there was the Robert Hall Winery in Paso Robles. They have temporary events that happen down there, and they wanted to increase the number of people that they would be allowed at these events, and that was found to be consistent, and so they were allowed to do that. And the other one was in the Paso Robles area as well, which was a subdivision of five existing agricultural parcels, and they're putting those into 18 residential and clustering the rest of the agricultural so that it becomes a large open space, and then that will take care of the ability to in the area of the DMV, that area. And they've got a subcommittee going on it that met with the, you know, with the people that are proposing this, the city and the county is working together on this. And Adam Hill, the third district supervisor, was there at our meeting and gave us a little presentation talking about growing homeless population that's happening. And they're wanting to find a central location for a homeless shelter and homeless services that they can provide. And they're looking at this area. The city, county city planner, used to be a city planner, he's now in Michael Codron came in and talked to us about it as well. He's now with the city housing and program manager, homeless services. They're looking for some kind of a campus that they can get the services together. This area would be good in the sense that it's close to other government services that many homeless families will take advantage of. It's kind of like a one-stop place for the services that the homeless people need. This property that they're looking at, county-owned property, is they want to develop it into anywhere from 154 to 210 beds, with a day use capacity of about 250 people. Currently, under the plan, the airport land use plan, that allows for 90 people on this property. So it's considered residential use. There's a number of, you know, there's been a lot of work within the county and a number of individuals trying to get something for, you know, something done for the homeless in the county. I remember that we as a board sat on a, you know, we all met with the other cities around here over at the library area and talked about that for a while in there. So this work has been going on for a long time. For it to come by the Airport Land Use Commission, they're going to have to get an exception. The Airport Land Use is going to have to go through the process of granting them an exception to the plan for them to get permission to have this at this place, you know, at this location. I ask if they'd looked at other locations, and you know, there's been look all around the county on different places. So it's coming up. It's going to be going through the process at the Airport Land Use Commission. The feeling seemed to be that there were some commissioners that you know, that had been working on this and that would like to see it happen there, and there's some that are looking more toward you know, it's a lot of people to put in and a lot of to have in an area that you have a lot of air traffic over. So that was basically the meeting at the Airport Land Use Commission. Our next meeting is going to be August 19th, and it meets at 1:30 in the County Board of Supervisors chambers in San Luis Obispo. On July 21st, I attended the airport or the Zone 11A Advisory Committee here in Oceano, and we received an update. This is a committee that is the advisory committee to the county on the flooding area out by our creek, and so. And this, you know, this committee, they brought us up to date on the levee maintenance work so far, and what they're still working on is repairing the north levee to its original level. And this is being funded by the OHV funds that they received, and they're working on the permits right now to get to do this. And they're also working on removing sediment from the front of the flap gates by the lagoon, and the permits hopefully should be done by October 15th to do that work, and that'll be funded out of the Zone 11A funds. They're working on the Water Management Program EIR, and they're hoping to have that done optimistically March 2010. And then as far as the vegetation work is concerned, they started the vegetation work on July 6th. They now have two crews working on it, but they've got to take 3 Fridays a month off due to furloughs. But the work is moving quickly. They're now done with the vegetation removal between the Highway 1 and Halcyon Bridge and the 22nd Street Bridge. They've done the work between the 22nd Bridge and the railroad tracks, but they got to come back to from the creek, and that concludes my reports on that. Advisory Council will meet this coming Monday on the 27th.
They got a lot of pampas grass.
That's mainly that and the castor bean is mainly what they're going to be removing.
Donated to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. But it's an invasive species, and they're, you know, if they could find a way to eradicate it, that would be great. But
it's called the Rose Bowl. Great.
Yeah.
Fern, you're on the Airport Land Use Commission as the alternate for
Yes, I am. I am an alternate on there.
Yeah. And Mary is our representative to Airport Land Use Commission. Is
That's
that correct?
Correct.
And Vern said that he attends it all the time, and so I haven't been attending it. Ms. President, would you like me to?
Well, that was the one committee.
I'd be happy to.
You should go.
Okay.
He's going as an alternate member of the Airport Land Use Commission, which is different than our representative.
Okay. It's just that Vern and I had talked.
Yeah, but I, you know, you said you wanted to do that.
I'll be happy to attend.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Good.
I'll even try to be nice.
Well, when you're our representative, you don't get to say anything. You just have to sit there and listen, I think.
Oh, then it won't be too hard.
Pam.
Well, Fire Committee, we did it all. So thank goodness that part's done. But I do have a Zone 3 report, and that meeting was July 16th. The Lopez Lake is at 55%. It's coming down. We're delivering 4 million gallons of Lopez, 2.1 million of state, and 6.1 is total delivery. Downstream releases are
just went up to 4 million gallons per day, and that's because the ag interests needed additional water downstream, not only for the steelhead, the habitat conservation plan, but now for the ag people that actually pump water out of the creek. And there are a couple of them still that do that. Release total, we had a question about that, and they asked if we are exceeding the safe yield, yearly safe yield, and the answer was yes. Both the member use and they wanted to look at this more carefully now since we're operating beyond the safe yield, and that's going to the technical advisory committee. So we have definite concerns about the downstream release, and that downstream release, at least for the fish in the habitat, is going to continue. They say at Lopez, they begin their year for the lake April 1st and end March 31st because it's more easily able to assess the rainfall. One of the things we were talking about is how much longer this downstream release is going to have to take place until we have a habitat, an HCP plan, and this is to protect the fish. What they've done now is they said they've done the last of their studies. They're ready to write the second and final report that they're going to submit to National Marine Fisheries, and that report should be done, they thought, in September. National Marine Fisheries reviewer says that he can get the work done in about a year. So September, a year from now, and it's been 12 or 13 years in the going on. And we're coming to an end. We're finally coming to an end, and I think everybody is kind of on board with what's going on with this. And at that point, we will not have the releases that we have had to do all these years. Everybody asked, okay, they said, how much is this costing us over these many years? Between $900,000 and $1 million. And it's just part of doing business. It's part of doing business to protect the steelhead trout coming upstream.
So, just out of curiosity, when they say they do those down the releases, so that they let water out of the dam down the creek, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then where does it go?
It goes down the creek. It's not flowing out to the ocean.
That's
it's dry beyond 22nd Street Bridge.
Right.
So what the plan is for later is with most of the steelhead plans is they are tracked to
get some water.
They're actually trapped in some of the locations. They found them in
there's some big ones.
Down the creek. Yes.
There's
so they are in the creek.
They're hanging out in the
and
creek.
And so they're living out their lives in the creek versus what's natural.
Being able to go out, which is Yeah.
It's
odd.
Yeah, because naturally, I think this creek would have, if it wasn't for the dam, would have dried up every year.
Yes.
And a lot of those fish live in the creek until it's open to go out to the ocean, and same way with coming back in. And we did have last year, I think it was, we had a tremendous kill out there in the year before last, when we had a heat wave come in, we had a tremendous amount of kill out in the creek. And what happens is they get these hot spells, and the farmers have to pump a lot more water to keep their crops from dying as well. And that's the main reason that when they release all this water downstream, that it never makes it out to the ocean. It gets absorbed into the ground to replace the groundwater that's being pumped out.
All right.
Anything else, Pam?
They told us there are no quagga mussels found in any of our reservoirs, and that we have several meetings yet to go with the plant upgrade and Black and Beach and Paul Corporation. The interesting thing when you asked about water quality is that one of the things that we have in our water at the treatment plant at Lopez is, let me get the right name for this thing.
Right, cryptosporidiosis?
Nope, it's MIC, microbial-induced corrosion.
Yeah.
And they had, as part of the Paul system of filtration, they use stainless steel pipes, and they're all being eaten up by this MIC. And they're planned to be replaced with plastic pipes. And that's supposed to be covered by the Paul Corporation because they did know what our water was. If we have more rain, the water softens because there's water softened coming from the rain and being in the Lopez Lake. But we haven't had rain.
At some point, I think people, you know, they're understanding, but when they're pumping out hundreds of dollars a month just for usable water.
It's just the way our water is. We have some of the most difficult water to treat in all of the United States, and people that come here cannot believe the quality of our water. So it's a fact of what's happened, what's where we live. So, and to treat it so that it becomes softer, it's very exorbitantly expensive. And
I know.
Wouldn't want to do that, which is why everybody has to do their own specific softener for their own household. It's unfortunate, but that's the way our water is here. That's the way it is along the coast, and especially the Central Coast, and we live with it. But we live in a beautiful place, so it makes up for it, right?
Thank you.
Anything else? I think that's it.
Okay. Director Lucy?
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. At this point, we'll adjourn to closed session, but before we do that, we want to get rid of A. And then take it away, Ryan.
Madam President and Directors.
Wait a minute. Are we in closed session?
Not yet.
Not yet.
He has to do the announcement.
We're going to adjourn to closed session for the following matters. A closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957D1 to consider the appointment or employment of a public employee. The position under consideration is the general manager. Also going to a closed session pursuant to Government Code 64957.6. To meet and confer with the district's designated representative to consider compensation and benefits to its represented employees. The district's designated representatives are interim general manager Kevin Walsh and Ryan Fothergill. Under consideration is the fire department's memorandum of understanding. And we're going to a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B. To meet with agency's counsel concerning pending litigation. And the case in question is Santa Maria groundwater litigation of Santa Clara County, case number CV770214.
Thank you. Go to closed session now. We need to turn off the cameras.
Consider the appointment or employment of a public employee. The position under consideration is the general manager. The board has set up meetings to interview potential candidates for the general manager position. As to item 11C, a closed session pursuant to Government Code 64957 to meet and confer with district's designated representative to consider compensation and benefits to his representative employees. The board has given instruction to the district's designated representatives to pursue with the local firefighters union. And for 11D, conference with legal counsel pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B to meet with agency's legal counsel concerning the pending litigation known as the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. The board and counsel
and general manager discussed ongoing matters.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Interim general manager items for discussion.
The audit report is proceeding. Just to give a little background, we had a need for some temporary help. We called an agency and got a few names. The people were out of the area. They wanted $70 or $80 an hour to do the work, and also they wanted a longer term. They're looking for longer term employment on a 6 months plus type basis compared to the
temp agency.
Mm-hmm. Yep, temp agency gave us these names. So that took some time, resulted in the dead ends there, and we ended up contacting Harold Wright, who helped us out last year. Of course, he was more or less quite available and has recently taken steady employment, but he did commit to helping us one day a week and on the weekends. And he's been doing that. In fact, Ryan will be here this Sunday working with Gene on audit materials. Now, Ryan Cornell had come out from our law firm of Moss, Levy, and Hartzheim, had come out here on May 26, began preliminary field work, was scheduled to come back on July 27th and 28th. However, we're not ready to go. We need another 2 weeks' worth of work. Mm-hmm. So Ryan's kind of booked up here in the audits.
We can't get Ryan on the 6th and 7th.
We're not ready for him. We have to, Harold and Gina have to prepare for him to come out and do his field work, and we're not ready for that.
Do you have anything else?
No.
Board member items for discussion. Panel?
I have nothing.
Mary? Vern? Okay, I do have one thing. back in June 24th, we adopted a resolution adopting an interim budget for the 2009-2010 fiscal year, and that was for 45 days. Which would be August 15th, and in my humble opinion, I don't think we'll have a budget by August 15th, so I would ask that on the next agenda we have a resolution adopting an interim budget for another 45 days, I would guess.
I agree.
Yeah. So that's just a staff direction. I can do that, right, when it wasn't on the... Yeah. Okay, that's what I wanted to do. Has anybody got any questions on that or anything?
No, I just have... No, I don't have any questions. I hope we're still all alive by the time we finish an audit.
Yeah.
You know, it just goes to show how expensive staff gets when staff is driving the boat. You know, there is accountant assistants stacked 10 deep wanting to help, wanting to work. But they always go back to what they know. So we have somebody one night a week, which is holding up our audits, which is costing us more money because we have an office manager or dictating how things are being run. So, you know, the district has to decide how much more money they're going to spend playing the game.
Do you have any comments?
No. And Kevin, I would actually print off Randall because we don't have an audit. Because the person in charge of getting the information has one person they will only work with. And they keep going to Tarek is just, it's unacceptable.
Okay, it's 1 minute to 10, so I need a motion to extend this. We just have two more things to do.
I move that we continue past 10 o'clock to finish the items on our agenda.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. Consideration of the minutes. Everybody look at those. We have, I think we have two sets of warrants here. That's because, do we break them out between the two years? Is that correct? No, I guess, yeah, what we do. We have some that are 08, 09 on here and some that are 09, 10. Oh, actually, we only have one set. I just ended up with two sets.
Oh, you ended
yeah.
up with two.
Yeah. You can do this with one motion.
Yeah, okay.
I just had a question on the other, and I think I probably know the answer on the payroll. Is that buying back or paying for vacation or something not used? Because there are a couple of people that have really big other items.
I'll have
on the
to
payroll.
Check into that, Director Dean, and get back to the board on it.
I'm just wondering if we're paying for vacation unused that they cannot hold over or something like that. It's big.
Yeah, I don't know if it's. I always thought it was in December when they bought it back, but probably not.
I don't. It's probably fiscal year
yeah,
end or
probably.
Something. But that's the only question.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I'm right.
Yeah,
if
I
that's
think
what it is.
I'm not sure, so I won't guess on that.
Kevin, may I ask you if you could ask Mr. Bulba if he needs a budget to attach, if he needs an audit to attach to his grant? Because I would hate to see this man put all this work into this grant and not have an audit.
I will ask him.
I thought they already got the grant.
They've got the grant.
He's already got the,
already got the
money.
Grant.
He's already got the money.
He's
just now has to go through.
The grant's already been approved.
For the
purchase.
Truck.
For the exhaust.
Oh, no.
No,
the
for the truck that he's writing for. The
oh,
truck.
The truck, not the exhaust fan.
It's disrespectful.
Questions that we've received?
No.
I did call for the vote on that. On the warrant? Yes,
we
did.
Said aye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, no public comment, no written communications?
No, none.
Okay, we stand adjourned. 2 minutes after.